Okay, I'd like to call the Mountain Regional Water Administrative Control Board meeting to order. Do we have any public input?
Does not look like it.
Okay. Seeing none, do we have to go into executive session?
We do this evening. So, motion to move into executive session.
Second.
So that was a motion by Ian, second by Joel.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, it's unanimous.
Alrighty, Karen, I got the tape rolling again. We just came out of executive session. Ian made the motion. Joel seconded the motion. I was unanimous. And we're ready to go.
Okay, we're on to the consent agenda. Did anyone have any changes to the meeting minutes?
None from me.
Okay, what about the check register? Did anyone have any questions? If not, I would like to start.
You can start.
It seems like we had a ton of expenses on Lost Canyon. Like we had a booster pump and we had something with Skyline for $22,000 and something with Nickerson for $23,000 and then something with SKM for
$1,800. Karen, I'm kind of hearing you, but starting a little bit. I know they were replacing two pumps down at Lost Canyon, refurbishing them, so that's probably some of the checks to referring to Lost Canyon that you saw. Probably Skyline Electric, the motor repair, so that's probably one of the checks you're asking about, 25266.
I just know it was for 22,000, yeah.
One for 22,000, yeah, so they're just doing, updating some of the pumps and motors down there. There's like nine of them and they were overhauling two of them is my understanding.
We typically budget for two a year, and I'm not sure if just the way the invoice cycle and the work lined up, they fell on this invoice.
Okay.
Or this, excuse me, this check register.
And then we had something called a smart boost for $89,000.
Yeah, that's the Silver Springs tank disinfection system and tank mixer that was added so that we could start to use the spring again.
Okay.
So those were the improvements that Sam's been leading for the last few months.
Those pictures were included a couple months ago. Okay. The panels and so forth that we'd installed to be able to use the spring for the next 18 months.
Okay, then just the last one was the Delco Western for Silver Creek Well for $8,898.
For how much again?
$8,898.
Silver Creek Well would be the what we call the Tank Well 16, was it for the pitless adapter?
Yeah.
The well that we drilled in Silver Creek adjacent to our new pump station and tank that was constructed a few years ago, that new well was drilled, a year or two ago now. We're finally getting that equipped.
Okay. Okay. That was all my questions on the check register. Did anyone else have any questions?
I had one. The concrete blocks from Geneva for $1,500. Wondering where those were used. Or...
They went behind the community water treatment plant building up in McKinns, in Willow Draw, to create a buffer behind the building that we can get equipment into so the hill doesn't slough off.
So it's like
snow.
So it's like a retaining wall?
Yeah.
Okay. How big are those blocks?
I don't know, like 6 feet by 3 feet or something.
Yeah, I was
going to
say 30 inches by 6 feet.
So is that an installation and the blocks being dropped off, or did we install them? And
no, we had an excavator do the installation. Okay. So we just dropped, our guys went and picked them up and dropped them off for them to install.
Cool. That's it for me.
Joel?
Just a question. On the colony, they're pretty much done with all those sales. Do we anticipate any more improvements or replacements of anything related to the canyons, to the colony?
From an improvement standpoint, I think that answer is yes. I'll start with, are we still working through some punch list items and things on the PRV stations that are in phase five?
We've accepted them. Yeah, okay. There's some tuning things we're doing on them, but they're done and constructed in the warranty period to start on that.
One thing that comes to mind is I believe TCFC has 14 parcels up there, somewhere on the order of 15 lots up there. I'm assuming going to be some water system improvements that are related to those. So with respect to IMA, who has developed the colony, you know, I'll say that majority of that work will be done and nothing further from a new perspective. Repairs and replacements will happen with time, obviously. And then the TCFC piece, I don't know exactly where those lots are, but I would expect some improvements to go in to support those lots.
If you have more questions of the colony, let me know.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to anticipate expenses.
Yep.
That really concerns me.
Yep.
I mean, the colony is getting old. I mean, it's not old, but it's old.
But you're right, and we're seeing maintenance events happen up there.
Yeah. And I think we need to. I know there's at least a million more square footage. Square feet of development, and that's all the canyons.
Yep.
I mean, that's a lot. Yep. That's a lot of square footage. With that increase in square footage comes water usage, obviously. And I just want to make sure that we have a handle on that. Yep.
So keep in mind the majority of that square footage is in Summit Waters District.
Yes, I know.
They'll be serving that.
I know. That concerns me. Especially with the water, what I consider to be a water shortage. Not just this year, but next year. Because we don't know what the freaking winters are going to be like.
Yep.
Okay.
You're right.
I'll be quiet.
Well, just with respect to the colony specifically, so when the developer built like the lower booster stations and so forth, they were designed and scaled for the complete density within the colony, right? And they weren't necessarily furnished fully at that time. So like they may have had space for four pumps, but they only installed two initially. So we have gotten with the plan to build out and finishing of their project, we have worked with them and installed the rest of all the mechanical side of stuff. So while there are pumps that are older, we also have pumps that are newer,
right,
and all those stations going up the mountain as part of the build out.
Because remember, you guys know that we have a primary house, a second house, and an outbuilding. So there's potential for three structures, and God only knows the size, and God only knows how much water they're going to use. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
To follow up, we will keep you posted on colony improvements.
And likewise, I mean, I'll let you know if we approve anything at the Sustainable Basin Planning Commission.
Okay, that'd be great.
But nothing has come through, just so you know, nothing has come through recently. And if it has come through, it's minor stuff. It's not major stuff. I'm more concerned about the big stuff. I'm not as much concerned about the small stuff, and I consider the homes to be small, not to be that large. I mean, they may be large, obviously.
Yeah.
But they don't use near as much water as a high rise does.
Yeah.
Okay, then we have two purchase orders on ETS. Do you want to talk about that?
Yep. So, The purchase orders, I don't know if you guys, unfortunately the folder that had a lot of that information didn't get transferred into the board packet. It is in there now if you want to review it after the meeting as well. So we contacted ETS, which is the Eminent Threat Solutions out of Layton, and had them come and do a study of our district or the network security and so forth. And we also talked to Les Olson Company. In talking with both companies, since both, they weren't really apples to apples kind of comparison, but just in a feel with the two entities, ETS had done more work with SCADA related systems. They work with SKM, they work with Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. They also work with Summit Water. They definitely have a history with SCADA related systems and networking. So the big purchase is a hardware purchase, which is all new network security devices. It's all the switches, all the cabling, all new racks were necessary, along with servers and software to run everything we could possibly want in the future. It would run our SCADA system, it would run security systems, so cameras on facilities. It would also run our GIS software hosted locally instead of on Amazon, which is where it currently is. Bunch of sort of localized things being able to be monitored in one location instead of across several locations. It's kind of a different shift from what Doug Evans had been trying to do by trying to get everything into the cloud. Yeah. Having gone through this whole ransomware thing, having somebody that is a true network expert, I feel is probably in the best interest for the district. Their approach with this, with all new hardware, is that all of their employees all work with this set of hardware that they're proposing. It's all stuff that they keep on their shelf and latent, so if, heaven forbid, something happened again, it would be a matter of hours to be spun back up completely new. So like the sewer district would have the same server that we have as far as hardware, right? So they standardize everything to be able to replace it for everybody, all their customers. All their employees are familiar with everything, kind of makes it a much more seamless approach in my view, that it's going to be cohesive, 24-hour monitoring, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
And then they'll handle the backup,
yep,
for us? Okay.
Yep, so it's also backups, remote backups, IT help as far as, setting up new computers and all that kind of stuff. They'll take as much load off of us as we want them to. Moving forward,
system monitoring.
Yeah, system monitoring, so network monitoring, system monitoring, endpoint computer monitoring. And that the way that it would work, so currently all three of our, we'll call three of our main locations, the Lost Canyon, the treatment plant, and the office, are all completely physically separate networks. They're not connected. You can't share resources between them or whatever. And with their backbone set up, we'll be able to do that. We'll be able to print at the office printer from Lost Canyon. And by doing that, they'll be able to monitor all the endpoint computers, and they'll have all authentication through all of them.
Hey, we're digressing a little bit, and if I have to come back to this, I will. But are we experiencing any more problems or challenges with people breaking into our system?
So I was talking to Scott about it. It started maybe 3 days ago. And I get maybe every hour, 2 hours, I get a notification of somebody trying to access our system remotely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's failing. I mean, it's, but I get the notification that somebody is regularly trying to.
It's constant.
Yeah.
At the treatment plant or just?
Yeah, the treatment plant. They're trying to get onto the treatment plant firewall. So they can't, but they keep trying, and I see the failed attempts at it. And it's from different IP addresses all over the world. Brazil, Peru, Malaysia.
Are we one step ahead of them, you think? Or two steps or whatever?
I'd like to hope so, but I thought so before the ransomware went out.
So everybody keep in mind that if there's specific security concerns, we're not going to talk about it in open session.
Okay.
So do you guys have any other questions about this or concerns? Because I understand it's a large sum that we're talking about.
I know. I realized when I was looking through the purchase orders, I thought it was like one purchase order for $80,000, but they were just, there are two purchase orders that are.
Yeah, so
it's a 3-year agreement and one's for the equipment.
Yeah, the 3-year agreement is actually charged monthly to us. So the lump sum is shown.
Yeah.
But it's a monthly charge to us. And actually the monthly charge was slightly less than what the Les Olson estimate was. But Les Olson didn't have a hardware component to it. They were sort of they'll take us as we are and monitor and then fix as necessary.
We didn't just choose these guys because they were the lowest bidder. We chose them because they have more experience with our system.
I think they're the best solution.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I think they will provide us with the best level of service, and I believe they will provide us with the most secure option moving forward.
Okay. Do we want to make a motion to approve the purchase orders?
Motion to approve ETS purchase orders as shown on the minutes.
Sorry.
For agenda, sorry.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
And then we need a motion to approve the consent agenda, I think, as well.
Okay, and can we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda as well.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, two unanimous.
Could we have just approved the consent agenda and that includes the, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right, on the agenda item number 4, I apologize for the what feels like a bit of a merry-go-round on this, but the Pine Meadows annexation administrative fee agreement is in the board's packet for one, hopefully last time for your consideration of approval. The only addition was the Pine Meadows legal counsel reviewed this and requested that they have a reciprocal indemnification clause in the contract. I was comfortable with it. Dave reviewed it. He was comfortable with it. That's the only change.
It's pretty common. Yeah. It's just that one paragraph.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. So we're getting close.
Now we can start working.
Do we need to make any motion on that? Or
you
not?
Do. You need to make a motion to approve that.
Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion to approve the Pine Meadows annexation agreement?
So moved.
Okay. Any second? When there's only 3 of us, there's a lot of work for you. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that's unanimous.
All right, Steve, you're up.
All right.
Agenda item 5.
So we cannot see your screen yet. There you go.
Okay, let me hop over to this one. Is my screen up okay now, guys?
Yes.
Okay. So I'd like to start just to talk about net income, revenue, and expenses a little differently. As you can see, if we excluded all of our development-related collections, such as impact fees and meter fees and things like that, we'd actually be about $350,000 over on retail sales and about $250,000 lower than expenses. So we'd be, you know, about $600,000 better than budget. And we'd be talking about how close we were to budget. This year, however, we've had that $2.4 million more in development-related collections than we anticipated. So that's why we're seeing such a big variance from budget where, you know, we're at $4 million net income. We expect it to be at 1 and we're at 3. Well, out of that 3, $2.4 million of that is made up of development-related collections. So that's why such a big variance. That's kind of highlighted in this next box down here where you talk about development-related collections. We're already at $3.3 million this year. Last year, we were under $1 million at this point. So that's where we're creating the big, the net income, the high variance this year of the additional revenue. Our projections actually for usage revenue, base revenue, all those kind of things are actually holding pretty close. You know, I think we'd be very happy with being that tight to budget. On the expense side, I just wanted to highlight kind of over here behind the picture of the folks, something like that. And we are at 3.4% to the far right above last year's expenses. So we feel really good about that. We planned on, you know, about a 5%, 4 to 5% increase. So we're just slightly below that on our expenses. So I think that's a good sign of that we are watching expenses this year and staying in budget and below budget. Cash. There is a separate little cash, but as you can see, we are at 387 days cash right now. We are going to be spending some. We'll allocate some of this to our drought contingency fund at the end of the year to make sure we're below the 365. A lot of that is, again, all these development-related collections. Some of this money will actually need to be transferred to the impact fee fund, or has already been, but it was sitting in operating reserves at the end of July. But cash position remains strong, no concerns there. Our growth, this is always a really interesting point for this year. So through July, we're at 276 new water connections. Usually, for the four-year average, is that we would be at 68. So, you know, we're running four times our average on the number of connections and impact fees, pretty much.
Can I ask a little question about that?
Is right in line with that. Usually, there are 15 new lots or connections for the year. We're already at 60 for this year.
Hey, Steve,
so,
can we pause
yeah,
there?
Can I? So it seems like we're at, or you know, at a similar amount for expenses. Is there not like a component, like it just seems like with all these new connections, it would almost, you would almost need like a couple extra guys just to manage all these. I don't know. Is that just?
Well, at this point, they're just coming. They're just impact fees that have come in.
Okay.
So
the building isn't done yet, so the connection hasn't.
Well, I know there's no connection yet. I just wondered if there was, you know, it just seemed like there ought to be.
You just
some
need to
kind
wait 2 months until we bring you the budget for 2022.
Okay.
We have some personnel requests.
Right now,
but yeah.
Probably Anna's staff, Anna personally, is probably feeling the brunt of that.
Yeah.
And also just getting it all in the database. You know, just preparing the impact fee reviews, Chris's staff, you know, Mike, and then getting to Anna to get them prepared, us signing off. I mean, we're staying very busy doing something that usually didn't take that much time historically, let's say, just getting all those review requests, getting them reviewed, getting the impact fee calculated, and getting it to people so they can actually pay. It's really, there's been a lot of hard work by Anna and her staff to make that happen. And
yeah.
So,
even buying extra water meters, right? I mean, those are what?
I will see it next year as the meters are installed and final inspections have to take place. It'll kind of switch to their arena more than, let's say, the admin side of things. Yep. Does that make sense?
And Steve, you were talking today about budgeting for all the additional meters that Karen just brought up to be installed next year, right? So.
Yeah, and you'll see that when we roll out the budget for next year, we've actually created a new line. The amount of meters was never, historically, haven't been significant enough to kind of break out in its own line. It would just be part of supplies for distribution. But it's just becoming such a number we have to estimate, and such a big number that we're going to break it out into its own line so we know how many meters we're going to have to buy to actually install them. Because right now, basically as fast as we can get them shipped to us from Hydro, they're going out the door.
Yeah.
And that's going to be next year's case too, I'm sure, is, you know, just getting enough meters and endpoints specifically even to get everything installed and hooked to the system. what used to be just kind of mixed in with other expense numbers now has to have its own line item just to track all the meters that are coming in and needing to be installed.
It's amazing.
That was my pause to see if there are any more questions because I can't see you.
Carry on, Steve.
Okay. Move down to usage. Probably what I wanted to highlight most in this is July last year, MRW customers used 389 acre feet. This year, July, it was only 376 acre feet. We actually saw some conservation. I think the messaging, both from us and just general knowledge of the drought and the need, did cause some decreases. I would say residential customers kind of led that charge, along with common irrigation or irrigation where people are managing it actively. We saw nice decreases in both of those areas. So that was a good sign. I think with August, seeing how we're experiencing October right now instead of August, we'll probably see some nice usage decreases in August as well. So some, if you remember, the June report was, wow, we didn't really save anything. We actually did see decreases in usage during July, so that was a nice indicator for us.
Are we concerned that Park City is so much ahead of what they normally take? Or so that's all okay? Okay.
I didn't quite hear the question. I think it was about Park City's take. They are taking more, like through historically at this point in the year, for the 4 year average, they would get 941 acre feet. They're at almost 1400 acre feet. As you may recall, they can't take up to 2900 acre feet. And so they're going to take the most water they probably have since that whole arrangement's been made.
Okay.
As they put a Shilloh through Quinn's Junction plant. Was that the question and did I answer it?
Yes. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
What was the time frame?
I'm down to just quickly capital budget. The check that you asked about, Karen, about the Spring Creek, the $89,600, so that project is completed. That's up and running, so the focus is turning to the other projects we have for this year, getting the design on the Summit Park tank and treatment plant expansion and all those kind of things, along with wrapping up the community water, all the capital projects there, and then Newman Construction will be starting on that Kilby Road water line here and getting that finalized before the year. So that's kind of the focus for the remainder of the year. When you look at revenue, this July compared to last July, you'll notice that dot is basically right on top of the other dot. Revenue was almost identical. That happened because even though usage was down, we have more base. Because of growth, we got more base. So that's why revenue was about the exact same as it was last year. And kind of on this last sheet, that's just kind of showing July. We actually were below budget in residential sales for July and commercial. So that's again where we saw that there were actually some decreases in usage as to what had been projected.
Can I ask another question?
People are acting a little more conscientiously about their watering patterns. So,
who's under water sales irrigation? Not, you know, that seems to be like the only one that's significantly up.
You know, part of that is there's some new irrigation accounts that have gone in over at Silver Creek, for example, where they didn't have an irrigation account last year. And so maybe I didn't quite fully anticipate how much, you know, some of that common space area over there is being allocated. So that's an example of what goes in that irrigation account. Kind of, you know, HOA, common areas. But some of those have been really well, but we've added quite a few, and then a few didn't get on board, but some did, let's say.
Okay. All right, I'm done asking questions on Steve's.
And is the standby fees up just because of all the new connections? They have to pay standby until they're fully connected?
Well, it's a factor of when things are platted and then started to be charged standby fees. And as so many lots are getting platted and maybe something that was historically not a standby fee or maybe only one, now they split it into 20 units and we're charging 20 standby fees. So that is helping water sales, I guess. It's still part of that category, but it's not actively usage sales. But we used to always think standby fees for units would slightly decrease this year as we completed things, but there's so much new development, we're actually adding more. Even though we're adding connections, we're adding more lots that will eventually become connections. Does that make sense?
Yep, that's really helpful. Thanks, Steve.
You bet.
Hey, so
the hole in the bottom of the bucket isn't as big as the water that's being thrown in the top of it. So.
Hey, Steve, Joel has a question.
Steve, is there anything that we should be concerned about at all the bases that you went over? I mean, is there something that we should talk about? That's one question. I have some others.
Steve, could you hear that?
You know, if you wouldn't mind repeating it, I can't quite hear very well.
Yeah. Sorry. Is there anything that we as a board need to be, that you're concerned about, that you want to highlight or make a comment on any of those pages?
No, nothing to be concerned about. I did want to just kind of highlight that it's the development-related collections that's highlighted in this one sheet up here that's kind of throwing us off. I think we're getting much better at projecting water sales revenue and expenses. The budget's running actually quite tight compared to maybe some historical years. But it's kind of this weird anomaly to have the development-related collections make everything look so off. So I just wanted to highlight that. I think we're doing a good job on projecting expenses, staying within those expenses. We're doing a good job on projecting revenue from customers, usage and things. But I guess you'd call it the COVID growth spike, just that was not anticipated at all, has kind of thrown off our budget for this year. So that's probably all I wanted to highlight. But that's a positive. There's nothing on a negative concern I have at this point at all.
Okay. Now, this is questions for you and Scott. Are we, do we provide water for Silver Creek Village?
Yes, we do.
Do you know that on the design review committee, which I'm on?
Yeah.
I mean, we're approving stuff left and right.
Yeah, and we're seeing it, and that's a reflection of the, as Ian asked about the standby fees.
Yeah.
A lot of those subdivision plats that are happening that you're approving are coming to us. So.
Okay. Yeah. And if you need to attend the Mountain Regional Water meeting or one of your designees, let me know.
Okay, that's
okay. I want to make sure that you get all your questions answered.
Yep.
Because, as you know, the last thing I want to do is run out of water.
Yeah, for sure. We don't either.
That's all I have so far.
Okay. Any other questions on
Steve? Any other questions?
Nope, we're good, Steve.
Okay, and then the cash report was in your packet. If you have any questions, go ahead. It's basically, we're required to do one every 6 months that I send to the state, so I put it in your packet. But as you notice, I actually give a report every month on the cash position. But it's just a requirement that we have a more formal one every 6 months. But we like to keep you a little more informed than every 6 months on how much money we have. So you should be good. But if you have any questions now, go ahead and ask, or if you have something offline, you can let me know.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks,
great
everybody.
Okay, we're on to Scott.
All right, agenda item 6, general manager comments. I'm going to start with just an update regarding the regionalization meeting that happened on the 10th of August. It was held down at Weber Basin's office in person for the first time for that group for the last couple of years, which was nice. Two key discussion points or takeaways to highlight. One is that Bowen and Collins, Weber Basin has contracted Bowen and Collins to do a review of each water system's demands, you know, from a projection standpoint all the way through build out. So each water system is Mountain Regional, Park City, and Summit Water, who are all part of the master agreement. And generally, Bowen and Collins stepped through a draft of their demand report. They were soliciting comments and corrections from each group. Mountain Regional's projections, it was quite interesting, were extremely accurate, and this original report was done in 2012, so almost 10 years ago. There was some nuances, but at the end of the day, where we were kind of lining up today was really close to what they had thought. I need to validate the build-out projections, but, you know, just from a highlight to the board standpoint, the projections included in that report look good from my standpoint.
And these are projections from 2012?
Correct. 10 years old.
That's when Bob Collins did the work.
Did the first iteration.
And now they're being asked to do an update.
Correct, because the essentially a task that came out of some of the... there were a couple large regionalization group meetings that happened on the order of 6 months ago or so, where Tage Flint, the general manager of Weber Basin, presented the background of the master agreement, the different future water importation project options. The takeaway from that, the direction Weber Basin got from that was, we want to see updated costs of the projects that are listed as alternatives, and also a down selection and really an end goal of providing a short list of preferred projects. So they're looking at an East Canyon project to bring water in from East Canyon Reservoir to be treated at Weber Basin's treatment plant, which is on Rasmussen Road, which is currently not being used. The second preferred option is a parallel system to the Lost Canyon system, where there would be an intake in Rockport Reservoir, and the pipe would follow the alignment that Lost Canyon, the current Lost Canyon system does. So Bowen and Collins is doing this demand study because they need to understand what are the build-out demands for each system so that they can size the system correctly from a capacity standpoint. So to be able to get to, you know, reasonably accurate cost estimates, they know how to, they have to know how big of a system they're building. So that's the purpose of this.
They're just looking at those two alternatives, right?
Correct.
Okay.
The second kind of takeaway, I guess, from me is I probably presented this chart about an early part of this year. This is the Exhibit D from the Master Agreement that is released in the first part of the year every year. Joel, for your education, at the end of each calendar year, each water group is required to provide 10-year water supply and water demand projections, so that Weber Basin can understand if there is a basin-wide deficiency, and if so, if there's a deficiency within the nearest five-year period, that triggers Weber Basin to get to work on the design and construction of a new project. Okay? In year six currently, so in 2026, the basin is showing a deficiency, which is typical, I will say, in my experience working in this group. So a lot of times there's a deficiency in year six, and then we get to the end of the calendar year, everybody updates their information, and then within that six-year rolls into the five-year period, that deficiency is cured, and then we sort of wait another year to resolve that year six deficiency. So I just want to highlight to the board, there's currently a deficiency in year six, as is typical. Weber Basin is going to have some work sessions with us in Park City to talk about adding additional allocation to the current Lost Canyon project, because it's not fully allocated. That's an interim step that's being discussed. And all of the parties are being asked to sharpen their pencils on what their demand, supply and demand projections look like, so that when we get to the end of the year, we've got a good idea of what that year six looks like. I don't have any concerns at the moment that that deficiency is going to come into the five-year contractual period, but I just want to highlight that to the board.
Have you talked to council on the, I'll call it Skull Kidney area, on the growth that they're projecting, if they approve the Skull Kidney area?
I've not talked to them specifically. That's Summit Waters District, and Summit Waters should be including that okay. in their projections.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any questions on that, Amy? In general, I think actually better dialogue than what we've had in the past. Lisa and Mike stepped in remotely for a period of that meeting, and it was more constructive than is typical, which is good. Let's see, moving into other, I've got a couple notes. One is, Tim has asked a couple times about who in the district has the authority to make a decision related to a cyber attack, a ransomware situation where the district may be in a position where we have to make a payment decision in a short amount of time. Who's got the authority to do it? In our procurement policies under the emergency procurement provision, which I've talked to Dave about, the general manager, the CFO, or any of the department directors can authorize an emergency procurement. So generally, there are a number of people at the districts that can authorize that sort of action, whether it's Chris, myself, Lisa, Steve, Brian, all of those folks can pull that trigger. The reality is Chris is going to be involved, and then, you know, likely myself or Lisa or, you know, to make that call. The approvals would be an after-the-fact approval, where we would come to the board if it's in excess of the board threshold, and the board would approve it at that time. We also talked about some concerns over, you know, the typical method these days is via cryptocurrency, right? Do we need to have a cryptocurrency account? How quick could we gain access to be able to make these transfers? Generally, what we understand from experience and what we've seen, instructions are given if we find ourselves in this position to be able to act, and we will act as quickly as we can, and if we can't act fast enough, we'll isolate that facility from the system until we can.
There was actually a very interesting, like, if anyone watches John Oliver on HBO, he had a whole thing on this on his last show on Sunday. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So we feel as though we've discussed it and reviewed the process to the extent that we're as prepared as we can be. Obviously, we're going to be working through and learning if we ever run into that again.
And per the experience we've been through, the authorities jumped on board almost immediately when we contacted them. So we wouldn't be in this alone, right? Like, none of you would be put in a position where you need to make a decision without any guidance. You'd have experts to talk to.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. And we have a better understanding and a better dialogue going already with the entities that will be able to help.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a blessing we've been through this, because if it ever happens again, we're totally trained up. And now we've got a resource on staff that's training us as well. So
yeah.
Or on contract.
Yeah. 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 So I feel as though we've addressed Tim's concern on that.
Yep. I think he agreed.
I'll touch on some water usage information just to piggyback on Steve. We had our peak day. We don't have August data yet. Typically, our peak day happens in July. We have the July usage data from a production standpoint. Peak day was down 1 million gallons compared to 2020.
Wow.
So down.
Down. So 2020, we were at 6.8 million on peak day, and this year we're at 5.8. So again, you know, we're getting some traction, I think, with customers listening to the message. Also, the focus on reducing our systemic leaks, I think, is apparent in that data as well.
What, remind me the timing of the peak day last year versus this year?
I think last year was the 17th of July, this year was the 10th. It was a little earlier.
Okay, a little earlier, that's what I thought.
It was a week earlier.
A week earlier.
Yeah. Lastly, I just want to touch on a Canyons area development. I had a developer contact me yesterday. They have there's a development over there. It's the White Pine Village something or other. Joel, that may ring a bell to you. Large condominium townhome style units, I think. They have 30 condominium units. They have 12 of which that are either built or coming out of the ground that have connection with Summit Water. They've been told that the remaining 18 units that Summit Water is not able to serve them. And it's related to the tank dispute between Summit Water and TCFC that you've maybe heard us talk about over the years. Dave's talked about that in detail a couple times. I don't know all the nuances. The bottom line is that Summit Water and TCFC have a disagreement over an additional finished water storage tank. And until that's constructed, Summit Water is running into issues with providing additional water connections. We know this developer. This developer had to lower our White Pine transmission line a couple of years ago. We talked to them at that time about potentially coming on with us. They elected to stay with Summit Water at the time, and now find themselves where they are today. My position is now, a couple of years later, that us signing up customers that are in Summit Water service area, it is problematic in a number of ways, mostly related to projections and contracts. So from an internal district water resource projection standpoint, I'm not counting on signing up any of Summit Water's customers. Mm-hmm. We start signing up customers in their service area, our number of connections per year is going to go up significantly, and it's going to throw off the projections that we have. Secondly, the health department's concurrency program has a forward-looking 10-year schedule in it. Those projections would be off for both of us, right? Both us and Summit Water, if we start absorbing customers they are not able to serve. Lastly, from a master agreement standpoint, this Exhibit D, all of this water demand and water supply information would also be disrupted if we start to absorb their customers. What does all that mean? It means that the capital facility improvements that we're planning on the schedules that we're planning may no longer be valid. So my position is, at this point, is I recommend we say no, and we let Summit Water and TCFC work out their differences.
They probably have to work out their differences anyway, right? I mean, yeah.
There's so much more that's going to go on there.
Yeah.
It needs to be resolved.
Yeah.
And this would just be kicking the can down the road, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Dave, just to, I think I saw your ears perk up, just so you understand that with that action, who knows at what point that message may get to the council, but I think it's time that Summit Water and TCFC work that out.
I agree.
So.
Do you think they will work it out, or is one being really suffered?
Say that again, Joel. Will they work it out, or what?
Is one being really stubborn?
I don't know. I don't know the details of the situation. I think the district has to focus on our service area and the growth that we're experiencing, which, as Steve has presented, is multiple times over our average, and the drought conditions and everything else that's going on. I think we got to make sure we're taking care of our own. So, yeah. Any objection to that?
No.
Do we need to take a vote on it?
Don't.
Okay, great.
And let's see. Bear with. Go ahead. Chris is just bringing up. We also did a review into cyber insurance. We have that through the trust. So that's another kind of
benefit of the trust.
Yeah, another element that we've been researching.
Things off multiple ways.
I think that's it for me. Any questions for me on other topics? No. All right. Dave, any update from you?
Nope.
Any questions for Dave tonight?
taking all questions on masks and schools. But outside of that.
Yeah. Will we see any changes before they start school on Monday?
I don't know. I'm in discussions with my former body, the state school board. Which is an interesting thing because I'm negotiating with three individuals who I hired. I don't know how that's going to go.
Maybe it should at least be taken as a compliment to you.
I don't know. They're tough.
All right. I think with that, Karen, we're moving on to agenda item 8, questions on the department updates.
Department updates. Any questions on department updates? I have a couple, but I would let you guys go first.
Why don't you go first? Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I had a compliment to Brian on the sanitary survey, and maybe just all about regional, but some. There was no deficiencies on that survey of the system, so
they did awesome.
Yeah, congratulations, everybody. Yeah. That's cool. And then, you know, I'm a Summit Park resident, so I take it personal when, on a regular basis, there's water main breaks in the neighborhood. But it seems like we've had so many recently. Is there something, like, wasn't there a plan at some point for some funding coming in, like replacing a bunch of the utilities in the streets? Is there something Mountain Regional should do? Because it seems like it's failing just a lot more than anywhere else in the district.
It is. So, Brian, I'll start. If you want to interject or have additional comments, go for it. So, as a reminder, every other year, on average, there's a Summit Park infrastructure project.
Yeah.
So Sam and Brian have identified or working through identifying the project that they would like to do for next year.
Okay.
And they are going to essentially provide that input or present that concept to Summit County and the sewer district, because it's typically everybody participates in it, where if we're going to go and tear the road up, then water lines are going in, sewer improvements are going in, fresh asphalt's going down. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's
not the way Park City does it. Every year when school starts, it's like, why is it under construction? Yeah.
I guess that mostly answers my concern. I was just hoping that, we're not losing a bunch of water on a regular basis.
The water loss in Summit Park is really not, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's not nearly as bad as you would think it is when you look at the number of leaks, you know, main line breaks in Summit Park compared to the other areas. Summit Park system is actually fairly tight these days.
So it's not like these the breaks are occurring after an extended period of leak that we were picking up on. It's like they're just catastrophically breaking and then we get in there and fix them.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And we've had so many breaks that it's probably the best system in the whole district.
Yeah, and we know. Yeah, and we know if there's a new leak that pops up because Brian sees it in trending. Chris and I review the demand data on a regular basis. We see it in the demand data, so you know, people know very quickly.
Okay.
And also, Summit Park Tank 1 is going to be replaced next year. So between replacement of Tank 1 and the other water main projects in Summit Park, we're going to have a lot of work in Summit Park next year.
Well, hopefully at least, less breaks in the future.
Yeah.
Somehow. Okay. Chris, I saw you developed like a tool for monthly reports with the state, and it's like fully automated.
Yes. For water quality. So we had one through the SCADA system that was original data that we were using for like the past 6 or 7 years. The state has issued us a new report that we're doing, so working with Sam and SKM to get this new report as automated as the other one, and it's a lot more in depth. There's a lot more information that goes into it than our previous report, and it's they've actually locked the report down, so we can't make changes to it. They have, like, it's a permissions-based Excel thing that the state gave us, and so we've got to map the data to it and everything. So that's working with Sam and the treatment plant guys to get this all done, which also included us incorporating quite a few more analyzers and sensors and data inputs into the SCADA system as well, turbidity meters. It's been a big expense to the district just to be able to comply with the new state regulations.
And it's specific to the treatment plant?
Yeah, it's specific to the treatment plant, just to that particular process. So.
And Sam, I believe Sam's listening. Thank you to Sam. He's been manually entering a lot of data the last couple of reports that have gone up because we're playing catch up with trying to automate the report system.
So it's taken Sam basically a full day the last 2 months to each month to do the report by hand. So
I was just going to compliment that process, but compliments to Sam then for
Yep.
Thanks, Sam. If you could provide an example of that output.
Sure.
That'd be cool. I'd be interested.
I'm sure Sam can include it in his packet next month.
Or just an email. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. And then you asked if there was any more questions for you, and I held these off until the general notes. But
yep.
The new building, so the
new office.
Yeah, walking through that process with the architectural firm. Any other insights there? Is that timeline? I mean, it seems like they're moving pretty quick. Like maybe by the end of the year, they'll have like a kind of general idea. Is that kind of what you had in mind with schedule, or
how's that going? Yeah, I think in general the. My understanding of the county's timeline is they want to have a subdivision plat together by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And the district has had interest in procuring a parcel for us to, put this future facility on as soon as possible. So I think that aligns with the district's interest. From a working with the architect standpoint, we have completed work sessions with the architect providing they call it space programming, providing the space inputs to the architects of the areas that we need. They roll that through an Excel spreadsheet of some kind to generate size of building, size of parking lots, what size parcel do you need to accommodate all that. Well, I'm waiting on their final iteration of that, but basically we've completed the work sessions, we've given them the information that we can to get to the parcel size that Summit County will use in their master planning process. There's two off-ramps that the district will have that we've talked about with the greater group, and I think with you. One is at the time of purchasing the parcel. Mm-hmm. Right, we're going to go through this process. We're going to identify the size of the parcel. Tom's going to tell us what that's going to cost. And the district will have a decision point to make whether or not to move forward with purchasing the parcel. I would highly advocate that we purchase the parcel at a bare minimum.
Yep.
The second off-ramp will be when we complete, get into enough design that we have a cost estimate to what the office and maintenance facility will cost. We'll have another off-ramp to say, do we want to continue and complete the design, or do we want to hold off?
Okay. Have we made a decision, or are we going to make a decision as to the builder of the structure?
So that'll be further down the road. So basically, if we get to the point where we say, okay, we can afford to purchase the parcel, we can afford to move forward with finishing designing and moving to construction, then at some point there's going to have to be a bid process, I would think. Whether it's done in conjunction with the county or not, that's yet to be seen. But we'll have to go through a formal public bid process to be able to secure a construction contractor.
Okay, another question.
Yep.
The 2021 concurrency report, was comments and review requests sent. Was that you were requesting changes to them?
Yep, so we were...
Any significant?
I'll just say that we received a report from the health department, which was, we get two documents. One is a certification that we're considered to be compliant with the concurrency ordinance. Mm-hmm. That's just a letter that's signed by Rich Below and Phil Bondurant in the future. The second is a more detailed report by the concurrency officer of his findings of the information that we presented.
It appeared as though, based on the concurrency officer's report, that he did not read or thoroughly review the information that we provided to him. So I had a number of comments that went back to him to say, you know, I disagree with some of the comments that he had made. The response we got was that he had inadvertently sent us a draft. He sent us an updated report with our comments largely addressed. And at this point, you know, I don't have any further comments.
Cool, cool, nice catch.
Yeah, thanks.
And then last one, that colony Chalamet, was that our name was too shallow, or
you like say it one more time?
The colony.
The colony shallow.
Is that on us? Like they put something in too shallow? Or?
No, so Brian inspected the water main up in the colony, I forget the exact dates, 10 years ago or something. And it met our depth requirement, it was 8 feet deep.
Yep.
And at some point since then, we believe the developer came in and regraded the driveway and scalped off about 4 or 5 feet of fill.
Just 4 or 5.
Yep. And we've been, and we're still in a bit of a, I'll use the word limbo. It's our position that they need to bring that cover back to 8 feet. We met with the developer and the builder. Now that lot's being built upon. Mm-hmm. They want to pave the driveway, right? So we met with them, and it was agreed that our depth would be brought back to 8 feet. Sam continues to play phone tag with the builder to get updates to find out where we're at.
Okay, good.
So it's we've been working on this one for a while.
That's another important one. So yeah, thank you for defending the district.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold our position.
Yeah.
And thanks to Brian for checking it the first time.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it for me.
Joel, anything? So Chris, you said that you were doing some mapping of the treatment plant and the views. I was just curious if that was for something specific, like did you have somebody complaining?
No, it was not a complaint. It's a potential purchase of a lot adjacent to the treatment plant in Aspen Camp, and the potential buyer was wanting to look at his options to improve his view across the pond, essentially. Uh-huh. So that's where all that analyst came from, is to try and determine, you know, what impact his improvements were going to have on other people within the pond.
Yeah. And we have a bunch of spoiled dirt material that lines the pond, basically. You know, not the inside of the pond, but there's a, you know, on a property line, basically.
Yeah.
And he has interest in removing that berm. So we've been discussing internally, is it any impact to us?
For sure.
That position has been no, there's no negative impact to us. We're willing to be a good neighbor to the extent that we can. So Chris met with him while I was away to understand the extent to which they want to remove the berm. So we're kind of in ongoing discussions. Chris highlighted highly likely we're moving forward with a floating solar array. Could be as early as next year. He needs to be aware of that because he may not want to look at a bunch of solar panels on the pond. So he's aware of kind of what we're planning on.
So that's probably lot 13?
It's 11, I think.
Oh, 11. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dave,
interesting.
Question for Dave. Is that a risk to us? Like, if somebody has a piece of property adjacent to us and then we do something different on our property that impacts their view, do they have any precedent to push back against our development? Like, could somebody fight us on the solar panels?
People can fight about everything.
Ask an attorney.
Can they win in court?
Generally not.
Okay.
I mean, they would have to... do we have to ask this? Are we getting any kind of permit for it?
For the panels?
Yeah. Installed panels?
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that part of the process yet.
Okay. Because generally speaking, if a permit is required and we get the permit, if a permit's not required, then we can do what we want on our property.
Okay. We've also circled, you know, tied the loop with Promontory as well. I'm getting a letter from Promontory that states that they don't have any, you know, objection, or they approve of, you know, this property owner, you know, performing its work, basically.
Okay.
Just to make sure that we're covered, you know, I think we're doing our due diligence to make sure we're covered as best we can. Could something happen in the future, to your point, right? Could we install the solar array and then we want material as a buffer due to wind issues or drifting? Sure, you know, and then they'll be really upset.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we're doing our best with the information we have to be a good neighbor. We don't need that material there. So that's what we're doing.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. And then let's see. Lisa, I was wondering how customers are responding to your calls when you and Anna are calling to say that they are using too much water.
We got the first round of letters that we sent when people were with leaks, I think, was what we were kind of focusing on, people with large leaks. We had a great response. Everybody contacted us, wanted to know how they could fix it. I would say even now I hear even small leaks, some people are getting alerts. They're calling, even though maybe it's like 1 gallon an hour or something really small. People are really paying attention. So it's actually been really good. We followed up with a handful of people that didn't respond to our first letter and sent them another letter. But for the most part, everybody's really trying.
Okay. Well, that's good.
We haven't had nobody pushing back. We sent, okay, you know, all the letters we sent out to our top 20 customers and commercial. And commercial is a little harder to track down because usually the bills are going to accounts payable, and so you're trying to find the right contact. But all the customers that we sent letters to, all were really like almost apologetic. We're sorry. We know we want to do a better job. And John's been doing a lot of the audits. Like every Wednesday, we kind of have time blocked out for him to go help customers and figure out what sprinklers aren't working or how they can do a better job and be more efficient with their irrigation. So everybody's been really supportive. I haven't had any complaints.
Fantastic. And then let's see. So tell me about the insurance premium holiday.
Oh, so we're a self-funded pool with the county, and the, you know, reserves they kind of hold on hand for, you know, in case we have, you know, something go wrong with the plan. We're just in excess of those reserves where they are right now. So we've been talking about taking a premium holiday, maybe a couple months this year and a couple months next year. So our reserves are just, they really want about a 5 to 6 month reserve on premiums.
Yeah.
And we're like 18 months worth of reserves. So, I mean, you want to make sure you have enough in case you have, you know, a run on claims for some reason, but the plan's been running pretty well. And then also with COVID, like you probably heard, there was not a lot of claims going through for some time, and we've been kind of waiting for that to pick up, but we haven't really seen that huge trend. So we're being really conservative. I believe David Warnock is going to the council just to, you know, make sure that they're on board, but you'll hear a little bit more about that during budget time.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the employees will be thrilled, right?
Mountain Regional pays for most of it. Most of the employees in the plan are all paid for 100% because they're all on HSA plans, high deductible plans.
Oh, all right.
Well,
it's a
savings to the district that we, you know, I'm anticipating it's coming along. We had some room in the budget anyway, but we purchased that new TrackStar, thank you. I'm like, Star Trek? What is that? Software to help us with our employee evaluation project. Annual performance reviews and 360 reviews. And I'll be sitting down, I think, actually Chris and I are meeting with the implementation folks on Monday. So we've got all of our employees in this database now, and we can really use it to do more performance evaluations and more in-depth check-ins with them and goal setting, and really I think it'll help bring our review process into the 21st century. It's been kind of archaic, so we're moving that along.
Amazing. All right. Well, great. Great work. I don't have any other questions.
I have one follow-on.
Okay.
Is that something that the personnel committee could use for the GM review?
For sure. Okay. And the county's using it as well.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
So we're kind of piggybacking with their tool that they've brought on board too. So, yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Joel, maybe mention that to Tim.
Who will?
He calls it.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
All right. If there's nothing else, we'll be adjourned at 7:58.